Well, we started a series last week called Path to Our Purpose. And again, it's one of those things that I, it's just so significant. I mentioned this last week, and it's not an original for me. I know this is going to shock you. You think that I come up with all these clever sayings. But the truth of the matter is that, and that was a joke, by the way. But when people don't laugh, you have to tell them. Okay, so if they laugh, they know, And if they have a nervous laugh, they're like, eh. But anyway, it's supposed to be funny. Just like just now was. And so, I'm going to keep going. So, you're not going to discourage me from trying to be funny. But the truth of the matter is, discovering why God made us is so significant and so important. It's one of the most crucial things in our life. You know, somebody said that the two most important days are the day that we're born and the day we find out why. And so there's something about discovering what God's purpose for our life is. We need, to find that out because it creates a yes in our heart that enables us to say no to things in our life. I think about Joseph. He's one of my favorite people in the Bible. And as a teenager, God gave him a dream that connected him to his purpose. Well, he was so excited about it, he shared it with his family. He shared it with his family twice, and in their insecurity and in their fear, they felt threatened by him, so they sold him into slavery. And then he worked for a guy named Potiphar, and Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him. And Joseph, as a young man, was able to say no because he had a yes that was in him that was burning brighter. He was able to, the yes that God put in him gave him the ability to say no to this temptation that was put in front of him. One of the reasons why we struggle saying no to certain things in our life is because we don't know what the yes is that God has put in us. And the only place that you can find that is in God's presence. And so we talked last week that the way that we discover the path to the purpose, to God's purpose for our life, the path to our purpose, it begins with this, and that's when we become a Jesus follower. That the minute that we give our lives to Jesus and we begin to follow him, he begins to reveal to us why we're here. He begins to reveal to us why we were born, what his plan for our life is. Until that time, we just wander around in hopelessness, or we settle for counterfeits, one of the statements, and I mentioned a name of somebody and I had the wrong writer, and then somebody gave me the right writer and I don't remember who it is still, but he said this: most men live their lives in quiet desperation and die with their song still in them. Well, that's because we can only find that in God's presence as we begin to follow him, as we begin to be a Jesus follower. So we looked at that last week where we lay aside our life, we take up our cross daily, and we follow him. Well, we're going to look at today what the next thing is in discovering what God's purpose for our life is. So if you would, open up your Bibles, if you would, to Exodus chapter 4. If you're still learning your way around the Bible, there's an Old Testament and a New Testament, and the Old Testament starts with Genesis, and Exodus is in the Old Testament. It's the book right after Genesis. Now, Exodus is really telling the historical account of the children of Israel, their exodus from slavery in Egypt. And it talks about Moses, his birth, that when he was born, that at that time, Pharaoh felt so threatened by the Hebrews, by the Jewish people, that he was killing every baby boy that was 2 years old and younger. And Moses' mom hid Moses in the bulrush, and Pharaoh's daughter found this baby, took him in, but needed somebody to take care of it. So she found this Jewish woman to take care of it, and guess who the woman was? Moses' mom. It was how God had orchestrated all of that together. And so, so he was there in that palace for years, began to realize what his heritage was, began to have compassion for them in their slavery, that he was Jewish, he saw the Jewish people enslaved, and so he began to feel like, maybe I'm the one that God has called to deliver this. And so he engaged one day with an Egyptian man, ended up killing him, and somebody saw it take place, it confronted Moses about it the next day, and Moses was so afraid, he ran, he left the palace, he went into the wilderness, and he stayed there for 40 years, probably thinking that what he had done had cost him the opportunity to carry out the purpose that God had for him. And that can happen to all of us, man, that we can make mistakes or we can commit sins. And sometimes the devil will tell us, well, you're through. You're through. God will never use you now. I know you had this dream in your heart, but you did this, and so you're disqualified. Well, the devil's not the qualifier. Jesus is. And so as we learn, you know, to understand that and recognize that, if we begin to follow Jesus and he begins to reveal to us, this is what I have for you. Yeah, but God, I've done all these things. This is what I have for you. And so as we become followers of Jesus, we discover that. Well, so Moses now, for 40 years, he's out in the wilderness taking care of his father-in-law's herd, taking care of his flock. Probably, you know, reminiscing about the days that he was in the palace. And just, you know, what promise his life had, and thinking, my life's behind me. He was 80 at this time, 80. And all of a sudden in the distance, he sees a bush and it's on fire, which out in the wilderness is kind of an unusual thing. And as he gets closer, he realizes, well, there's a fire there, but the bush isn't burning. And so he drew closer to see what was going on. And it was God endeavoring to get his attention. And so he set aside his time, set aside his agenda to get close where he could hear what God had to say. And that's one of the things we have to be willing to do, is when God interrupts our life, to be willing to set aside our schedule and go, okay, I'm listening. And so God begins to talk to him and begins to reveal him, and probably is awakening some things that Moses had not thought about for years. I'm gonna use you to lead my people out of bondage. Well, now Moses feels disqualified, so he begins to give all of the reasons why he can't be the one. So in Exodus chapter 4, verse 1, it says this, but Moses protested again. In other words, he's giving God another reason why he's not the right person for this job. Moses protests again, what if they won't believe me or listen to me? What if they say the Lord never appeared to you? Then the Lord asked him, what is that in your hand? That's a great question, right? What is that in your hand? When you showed up here, what did you come with? What is that in your hand? And he said this, a shepherd's staff, Moses replied. A shepherd's staff. Now, I'm going to ask a question, and the obvious answer is the correct one. Some of you have never gotten 100% on a test in your life. I want this to be the day that you do that. And if you do, you can even take a picture. You know, if you're saying, this is me on the day I got 100 on a test, you can send that to your folks. They'll put it up on the refrigerator. I mean, everybody was, they'll all be celebrating, okay? So the author says, why would Moses have a shepherd's staff in his hand? He was a shepherd. That's right. Thank you, Bob. I know that you've had plenty of hundreds in your day and that kind of thing, and you're just helping people. See, it's even an open book test. It's even an open book test. So, how many of you know that the reason why he had a shepherd's staff in his hand is because he was a shepherd? Let me see your hand. Even today, some of you refuse to get the answer right. I can't do anything else for you. You don't have your hand up. I don't know what to help you. But anyway, for the rest of you, you passed. You got 100. You know, put it on the refrigerator. But here's the thing. Yes, it was something that Moses, it was a part of his life for the last 40 years. And it may be something that he never saw any value. Maybe even for him, it was a reminder of what he had lost. It was something that was common to him. He used it daily. It was an instrument and a tool in his hand that enabled him to do the thing that he was doing on a daily basis, and probably had no special significance at all. Like I said, maybe even there was an element of it that he despised it. And yet that's what God used. And so many times whenever God begins to deal with us, and sometimes the things he puts in our heart seem so great, and we begin to think that we're not qualified. We begin to look at all of the things that we don't have. We begin to compare ourselves to other people that we see do similar things. That, you know, and all their great gifts. I know, again, when I was first began to realize that God was dealing with me for youth ministry, for years I knew I had a call to helps ministry. And you're like, I've never heard of that. In 1 Corinthians 12, one of the ministries it talks about is the ministry of helps. That we're just called to help people in ministry. And so I would do that. I would usher. I would work in the parking lot. I would do prayer room counseling. You know, if they needed somebody to set up stuff, I would show up and set up. They needed toilets cleaned, I would do that. I remember I went to this little church for a while. If they needed the lawn mowed, I'd mow the lawn. And so I just knew I was called to help. But as time went on, God was dealing with my heart. And I knew he was calling me to do student ministry. And I'm like, God, I am not your guy. I'm not your guy. This can't be you. And I don't know why I'm so miserable not doing it. I mean, you know, I'm not the coolest guy in the world. I'm not musical. I mean, nobody, you know, only request I get when I sing is to be quiet. You know, I mean, there's not anything about me, you know, I don't have a cool haircut. I mean, just all of those things that I do now, but I, you know, all of those things that just that seem to, you know, that you would just kind of look and go, well, if you're going to do this, you got to have this, you're going to reach students. And I had none of those things. Matter of fact, I've said this before, but instinctively, kind of intuitively, you know, I can be a little bit of an introvert. If I'm in a place where I don't know people, if I kind of lean to my natural leaning, I'm okay with just kind of stepping back. Now, being called into the ministry, God began to work on me years ago, and it started with students in church, and that is, I need you to make yourself uncomfortable. Comfort has been your enemy. You allow yourself to just kind of rest in areas of comfort, and it's keeping you from doing what I've called you to do. And so he called me to step out and make myself uncomfortable. And so I'm like, well, I don't know. I can shake people's hands. And I would literally come up to students, and I'm like, hey. And I would stick my hand out. And I know I probably look like this really awkward dude. Like, hey, you know, and who's that? I don't know. That's a scary guy that works with the teenagers that's shaking hands. So anyway, but it was one of those things that God began to use that in me. And so this is what I know, that for all of us, that again, you're like, why am I here? Well, you can only find that out in reality when you begin to follow Jesus. But then the second thing is when you come into his presence with your stuff, with the gifts that he's given you, with the things you have available, with what you've used. And this is what I know, if you're taking notes, number one is this: the Lord uses things that are common to us. That shepherd's staff, even for some people, when they would have seen him as a shepherd, you know, oh, hey, the shepherd says that God's gonna use him to deliver his people. And the very thing that they would use to disqualify Moses was the thing that God was going to manifest himself to them through. He said, what do you have in your hand? And he said, a shepherd's staff, Moses replied. Throw it down on the ground, the Lord told him. So Moses threw down the staff and it turned into a snake. Moses jumped back. That was a good career decision. That's what you should do when a snake shows up. Then the Lord told him, reach out and grab its tail. So Moses reached out and grabbed it. And it turned back into a shepherd's staff in his hand. When it was just in his hand, it became a shepherd's staff. Whenever he released it into God's hand, it became other things. Its influence became so incredible. When Moses was willing to not always just hold on to it. And so he took it back in his hand. He said, perform this sign, the Lord told him. Then they will believe that the Lord, the God of their ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob really has appeared to you. Some of you, you have these. Again, I'll use Bob for instance. You know, it's Bob, I'm just so grateful. He doesn't realize the value, the impact it has when you walk in and you see his face and you hear his voice with those words of encouragement, how it impacts me and prepares me to come in here and pray. The same thing's true for each one of you. Some people have gifts that we all look at, like, oh man, I wish I could do that. I wish I could sing like them. I wish I could do this like them, think like them, you know, whatever it is. And for the rest of us, we just feel so common. But God's the qualifier. He's the revealer of what our purpose is, why he created us. And again, if you understand this, you know, a shepherd standing in society for God to say, that thing that you would probably want to get rid of when you walk into their presence, I want you to take that with you. I'm going to use that. And if you're going to discover what God's purpose for your life is, the path that you're on, will it get you there? Well, if you've made a decision to be a Jesus follower, that's the first step. But the second thing is to understand this, that the things that have been common to you, that God's gonna wanna begin to use those things that you've taken for granted and you just do this because you don't feel like you can really do anything else, that's what he wants to use. That's the thing that he wants to use, is that right there. So number one is this: the Lord uses things that are common to us. And so look at the second one. Go to John chapter 6. Remember I said there's a New Testament? Well, John is in the New Testament. And so it's Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. John was a follower of Jesus. Many historians think that he started following Jesus when he was a teenager. And he was the last of the apostles to die. He lived to be in his 90s. He was the only one that did not die a martyr's death. John 6, verse 5. What's interesting about him historically too is we have a few people that he discipled that we still have their writings available to us today. It's just incredible. So many of you have heard of the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000. I think that's one of the few miracles that's mentioned in every one of the gospels. So in John chapter 6, verse 5, it says this: Jesus soon saw a huge crowd of people coming to look for him. Turning to Philip, he asked, "Where can we buy bread to feed all these people?" He was testing Philip, for he already knew what he was going to do. Have you ever had the Lord do that to you? Ask you a question, and you're kind of like, He already has the answer to that. Why is he asking me? How are you going to do this? I don't know, Lord. I was kind of really hoping that you would tell me. And so this, he said, we're going to find bread to feed all these people. And so he said, Philip replied, even if we worked for months, we wouldn't have enough money to feed them. Then Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. There's a young boy here with 5 barley loaves and 2 fish, but what good is that with this huge crowd? So he said, Philip, where are we going to be able to feed him? He goes, well, if we even worked this time, we wouldn't have enough to feed all of them. And so then he said, and then somebody else said, well, hey, we've got this kid that's got a happy meal. He's like, I'm sure the other disciples like, thanks, pal. And so, this is what he said, what is that among so many? You know, I've been there before. Whenever there's a need that I have, or there's something that I think God wants me to do, and when I see whatever he's called me to do, or whatever it is that he wants to do, and I'm like, yeah, but I don't have enough. And the reality of it is sometimes I have this mindset that if I can't do all of it, I don't do any of it. And God always begins with what we have. He begins with, you know, not how great the need is, but what part can we play in it? There are times I have to look at it and I say, in this moment, I may not be able to do everything, but I can do something. My Happy Meal may not feed everybody, but it'll feed somebody. And so this is what Jesus did. He said, bring it to me. Have them sit down. He said, tell everyone to sit down. And Jesus said, so they all sat down on the grassy slopes. The men alone numbered about 5,000. So that's not counting the women and children. So there are probably at least 15,000 people there. Then Jesus took the loaves and he said, this isn't very much, Lord. How come you didn't give me all that? You know, this is just so horrible. No, that's not what it says. Then Jesus took the loaves and this is what he did. Gave thanks. Wait, you mean that what he had wasn't enough for the need that he had and he didn't grumble and complain about how little he had and how he needed more? No, he gave thanks for what he had. Thanksgiving is a lot of times where faith begins. Knowing God's will, what do you do next? I look at what it's in my hand and I'm thankful for it. It's amazing. So many times in miracles, there were 2 questions that would get asked. One was either, hey, what do you have in your hand? Moses, what do you have in your hand? Hey, how do we feed this? Well, I got this lunch. In one of the miracles in the Old Testament, Elijah came up to this woman's house and she was destitute, you know, that she had nothing left and they didn't know how to pay their bills. And the prophet asked her this, what do you have in your house? Did you not hear me? We're broke. Well, I got this little pot of oil. Bring it. And so many times, you know, we're disqualifying what God can do because we either don't value what we have or we're looking at what we don't have and think, well, God could use me if I only had this. Or the need is so great, and if I had that, I would do something. I think all of us probably dream what we would do if we won the lottery. I know some of you don't want to acknowledge that you think about that, you know, and you know, because buying a lottery ticket is gambling, and I'm not saying it's not. And I'm not saying that that you should buy a lottery ticket. I'm not saying I do buy lottery tickets. I'm not saying I've never bought a lottery ticket either. I'm not saying any of those things. I just don't get lost, okay? Stay here with me, all right? Don't miss the point. I just want to cover, I'm trying to answer all the things that are going on in your head as you're judging me. And so, oh man, if I just won the lottery, man, I'd get the church a new church. Well, I'm grateful for that, but help now. You know, instead of taking that, I don't know how much the lottery tickets cost. Anyway, I don't want to get into that anyway. So taking that money for that, man, like, you know, help us reach kids. I didn't say this in the other service. Somebody clearly needs to do this. You're spending way too much money on lottery tickets and need to start giving it to the Kids Project. Anyway, but we do that so often. We're just like, man, if I just had more, I would do this. So Jesus gave thanks for what he had. He gave thanks to God and distributed them to the people, and afterward he did the same with the fish, and they all ate as much as they wanted. Jesus teaches us to be thankful for those common things. We spend so much of our life looking at what we don't have that we miss the moment and the opportunity to use what God has given us in this moment and seeing what he would do with it when it's placed in his hands. When I did youth ministry, I remember that, you know, for a few years, the first few years we started, we weren't growing. I was so frustrated, so discouraged. And, And there's a youth group in town, and they were just having an impact. And in my insecurity, I'm like, you know, how come they're doing it, Lord? You're not letting us do it. They're clearly doing something wrong, you know. I mean, you know, if they were as holy as we were, they wouldn't be reaching that many kids. You know, all the things other people say about churches that are bigger than them. And so so I remember they had this huge facility. And I thought, well, man, if we had a big facility, we could reach kids too. And you know, the Lord just really dealt with me, like, just use what I've trusted you with. And it was amazing how it required us to be creative. And the things we were fishing out refrigerator boxes from the dumpster at the local mall, trying to create student events that students would want to come to. And we did. And the truth of the matter is, we begin to do those things. You begin to trust God with those things. It's amazing what he does with what somebody else would throw away, with what somebody else would discount or discredit. And so God wants us to look it around us and take inventory, not so we can be disappointed because, well, I only have this. I can only do that. But instead to go, God, thank you for this. Thank you for that. I can't do everything, but I can do something. So God, take this. I'm grateful for the opportunity to do this. So many times, you know, the miracles that take place in our life, they begin with what we have in our hand. They begin with what we have in our house. It starts there, and it begins, the beginning of that is being thankful. I don't have everything they have, but I have this. And so God does that in us, and so we begin to discover our purpose because Jesus teaches us to be thankful for those common things. Thankfulness always takes us back to Jesus. And anytime my life begins to drift away, all I have to do is look around me and be thankful. And just like with the 10 lepers, how the one leper turned back around, he went back to Jesus being thankful. Thankfulness always takes me back to Jesus. And so we begin to be thankful. Jesus teaches us to be thankful for those common things. Let's look at this last one and we'll close. Go with me, if you would, to Luke 5. You're in John. The book before John is Luke. John was eyewitness of this, of the things that he saw, a follower of Jesus, so he wrote the book of John. Luke was not one of the original 12, but he became a Jesus follower during that time, and so he began to interview eyewitnesses, and he wrote this account. And so in Luke chapter 5, verse 1, I love this, what took place here. One day as Jesus was preaching on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, Great crowds pressed in on him to listen to the word of God. He noticed two empty boats at the water's edge, for the fishermen had left them and were washing their nets. Stepping into one of the boats, Jesus asked Simon, its owner, to push it out into the water. So he sat in the boat and taught the crowds from there. When he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, "Now go out where it's deeper and let down your nets to catch some fish." "Master," Simon replied, "we worked hard all last night and didn't catch a thing." Now stop right there. So again, get a picture. You know, these guys, fishing was not a hobby they did. It's how they took care of their family. In other words, that was work. So they just worked all night long. They did the night shift. And when they were through, they'd not caught anything. And I will tell you, any job that you have, clean up is the hardest part. Because you're like, the job's really done. Can we just go home? You're there having to clean their nets. And especially, I would imagine, we didn't catch anything. Like, you know, we got to clean them up and then be back here tonight to take care of this. And all of a sudden, a preacher shows up and he's like, "Hey, can I borrow your boat?" And so they have him pull that. Can you imagine the media got hold of that? Local preacher abuses worker. Local preacher is indifferent to worker's plight as he has him taking him on a fishing trip after an all-night fishing time at his job. Local preacher takes advantage of small business owner. I mean, I just, you know, you can hear all of those things. I have nightmares about that kind of thing. Anyway, so he says, you know, and Simon Peter goes, "Hey, we fished all night long." And again, they were professionals. Jesus was a carpenter. They were professional. "We've done this all night long. We haven't caught anything. And when I would have been cleaning my nets, I'm having to sit in a church service and listen to you preach. So isn't the sermon over? I mean, you know, we did the altar call. It's time to go home. No, you want to go fishing now? Okay." So I love, he said, "We worked hard all last night." In other words, we've done everything we know to do. We've used all of our ability, all of our strength. Every ounce of resource we have that we could do on our own has yielded nothing. And didn't catch a thing, but if you say so. Everybody say, "If you say so." That's the difference. If you say so, I'll let down the nets again. And this time, it wasn't because they weren't working. They did everything. We worked all night long and caught nothing. They weren't lazy. They weren't sitting aside waiting on, you know, for their ship to come in. We worked all night long. We did everything we know. We're exhausted. You know the one thing we left out? We didn't ask what you wanted. Jesus, what do you want? What do you want me to do with this? He said, because you say so, we'll let down the nets. And so it says this, and this time, their nets were so full of fish, they began to tear. Now, these weren't cheap nets. These were like commercial fishing nets. So they were sturdy, and they began to tear. And they were so full of fish, they began to tear. A shout for help brought their partners in the other boat, and soon both boats were filled with fish and on the verge of sinking. Now, look, man, I've been fishing before. And we've talked, you know, hey, I don't got this many fish. I've never had, hey, if we don't get this back, our boat is going to sink. We have too many fish in here. I mean, that's an incredible catch. Just thought you needed to know that. And soon both boats were filled with fish on the verge of sinking. When Simon Peter realized what had happened, he fell to his knees before Jesus and said, oh, Lord, please leave me. I'm such a sinful man. See, why did he do that? Well, you know, I don't really know. You know, probably one of the reasons was that it was a sign to reveal to Simon, I'm asking you to leave all of this. It may have been also something that they, you know, he was going to walk away from his business and follow Jesus, and it was going to be a way to take care of his family for a period of time. I don't know all the reasons, but here's what I know, and that is, here's what it says to me that I need to learn from, and that is the impact of the gifts that God has given us. That impact changes when Jesus is allowed to direct them. Now, when Jesus wasn't directing him, it still served him. He was still using it as a business. It still took care of his family. Yeah, he had a bad night, but not every night was bad. But the minute that Jesus had a right to say, let's do this, its impact changed. They're gifts that God's given all of us. That on our own, it doesn't mean that they don't do something. But it's amazing whenever they're given in the hands of God. I'm sharing this series as part of it is my own story, my own testimony. And so I never want to leave anybody with the impact of I've done it all right, because I clearly haven't. Clearly haven't. I got lost in a moment on, you know, the buying lottery tickets. And we go, you clearly see that I make mistakes. But the truth of the matter is that I've had those moments, and I've shared this with you. You know, when I first started feeling this calling to student ministry, that I just felt so unqualified. I was so uncomfortable. I wasn't uncomfortable around students on football fields and things like that, but in church, I felt incredibly awkward. I would withdraw and just kind of lean back, and then the Lord was dealing with me. I'm like, Lord, why would you, if this is you, how can you use me? I'm not the guy that just everybody runs to. I'm just kind of there. I don't have anything. And again, there were things, there were God thoughts and leadings and nudges that he dealt with about just helping you understand the insecurities you're dealing with. Most people you encounter are dealing with those same insecurities. And you lay down your right to be comfortable, and you make yourself uncomfortable so that you can impact their life and let them know that somebody sees them. I began to realize this, that most of us feel invisible. And there's something about when somebody just notices us that has an impact. And so I'm like, as awkward as I was at that time, okay, I can shake their hand. Okay, I can give them a hug. I can encourage them and just, you know, just be there. I can listen. And those things, they would be good no matter when we use them, but there was something about it when it was connected to God's plan and his purpose and wanting to use me, but he wanted to use me to impact their world and their life. That what somebody else would discount, because people don't gather to see somebody shake hands. That's not considered a great gift. But with anything that we have, whenever Jesus has access to it, whenever he has a say in it, then its impact becomes greater. And we begin to discover our purpose. It begins to be revealed to us. It begins to be the path to the purpose that God has given us when we begin to release those things to him. So the impact of the gifts that God has given us, that impact changes when Jesus is allowed to direct them. Before he was allowed to direct that fishing boat, it was a business. It took care of his family. But when he was allowed to direct it, it took care of his family and enabled him to walk in the calling of God while his family was cared for. It was different. It helped reveal his purpose. And these gifts that we have that we view as common, oh, it's not a big deal. You know what becomes a big deal? When we're told to surrender control of it. All of a sudden, then it matters. And so then we have to let go and say, I trust you, Lord. In Moses' hand, all the staff was just a shepherd's staff. Whenever it was yielded to the voice of God and he's willing to turn loose of it, it became something that would verify his calling in the midst of men that were called to lead the children of Israel and gave him credibility. When he took this common thing and he turned loose of control of it, then God used it to reveal, like, I've called this person. I'll say this to all of you, whether you're business people or educators or people in the community or somebody that's, you know, you're a key role in your family or whatever your calling is, you're a machinist, whatever the first responder, whatever it is, that as you use those things that feel common, if you'll surrender those to the plan and purpose of God, it's amazing what he'll do with that and how he'll lead it. And its impact changes. I want you to do this. I want you to bow your heads and close your eyes. I want you to spend a moment with God and for just this moment to think about the things in your life that this is just who you are, and maybe it's connected to, you know, to just what you do for a living or maybe how you were raised or things that you did, and they may seem so insignificant. And that's a gift. Let's take a moment to be thankful that God's entrusted you with this. Or maybe even the things he wants to do, to look in the question that he asks is the same one that the prophet asked the lady, what do you have in your house? What is it that God can use here? Be able to use those things, bring those things, and be thankful for that. And the need is this, and I only have this. But Lord, I'm grateful for the this that I have. Whatever you can do with this, it's yours. I'm just going to be quiet for a moment. Father, just over each life, let each person here have a moment with you. For the Holy Spirit just shining light on things in our life, revealing things to us. Just stirring our hearts up to what you've called us to. Let's just spend a moment with God.